Up next, former White House correspondent Tim Miller joins us as we talk about some new evidence that proves a conspiracy and how he is pushing for the release of CIA files. Tim will join us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about our guest this hour. Tim Miller has been the chairman of the board of the Nashville-based Flat Sign Press since 1999. Prior to that, he was the CEO of United Publishing in Chicago. He's worked for the United States Congress in Washington, D.C. during the Carter administration, was a former White House correspondent in the 70s, also held full press credentials from the White House in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives. He's joining us tonight as we talk about the JFK assassination. Hey, Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, George.
Always a pleasure. Always indeed. Tell us about some of the new information you've been working on here.
You know, the new information seems to happen every day. Literally just 20 minutes ago, and they didn't say so, but I'm sure they had to have gotten my name from your website. But a person emailed out of the blue, I've never heard from them before, and they gave me new information that I'm not comfortable yet quoting it on air before I check it out, but there's a new piece to the puzzle just 20 minutes ago, literally, but things that I do want to share with your listening audience, George, there's probably nothing that you don't know. You're the expert, and I feel comfortable in saying that you know a lot more than I do. But since the last time I was on Coast to Coast, I've had a lot of time spent with Vincent Bugliosi over the telephone, and he's confirmed a succinct list of 12 facts that I believe prove that there not only was a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy, but that that conspiracy was centered around officials of the U.S. government condoning the action which was took, the action itself was taken by the mafia. Backing up some of those facts and those things that Vincent, and for those few who may not know who Vince Bugliosi is, he wrote a 1,600-page book just 2.5-3 years ago that was supposed to be the end-all that was all, and finally came to the conclusion that the Warren Commission was correct. But what I believe Vince did was he did a great job in following all the breadcrumbs that were placed there by all these agencies of the U.S. government, as well as the groups that were part of killing President Kennedy. James Files, to me, is the biggest unknown name. As far as your listeners are concerned, I know you know that name, but it shocks me that he's not a household name, because he's taken credit for being not just one of the three shooters that day, but the person who made the final shot, which was the shot that killed JFK. And ask yourself this question: why would a 90-year-old man who's in prison want to lie before he passes away about being the shooter, one of the three shooters? And if he wasn't telling the truth, how could he not be easily debunked by our federal government? And he has not been, to my satisfaction.
How come he hasn't been given the notoriety of publicity that he should?
You know, that's the $64,000 question, or in these days, $64 billion question. He should be. To me, I think he was.
His real name was James Sutton. He changed his name later, right?
That's correct. Okay. That is correct. But as far as, I mean, that name is even less known. And, you know, just in 10 seconds or less, this guy, an Illinois State Penitentiary resident, admitted after, what was it, 7 years of being worked with by former members of the FBI and a journalist. But then, after the original individual who finally coaxed James into, and I said coaxed, not coached, who coaxed him into finally telling the truth, and that name came from a secret FBI informant. After James Files was first approached and then coaxed into finally admitting the truth, and then that interviewer dying, the original FBI informant came forward with 10 others. So now you've got 11 former and or retired FBI agents all saying the same thing, that Jim Files is telling the truth. How could that not be a household statement?
If the mob participated in the assassination, Tim, they had to have been involved with other groups as well. It seems now that there are a lot of different parties that wanted to take JFK down.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, in my opinion, and I don't know why this has not been said, and to my knowledge, I'm the first to really coin this phrase. These people didn't think they were killing the president. They thought they were taking out the president who had stolen the presidency.
Well, that's a good point.
I think that these people...
They thought they were doing something right.
Well, they legitimized it.
In their own minds.
You're absolutely right. They legitimized it, but you have levels of people. And if you keep... it just came to my mind, following the money. If you keep following the money, it all goes up to a very small handful of people who were not government employees, who certainly were not there that day, and who never even came in contact with anyone who was there that day. But these are the people who benefited from the death of President Kennedy.
Well, that's so true. Now, tell me about your working relationship with Gerald Ford. Gerald Ford, of course, on the Warren Commission. He was a congressman from Grand Rapids, Michigan at the time.
That is correct. And, you know, one of the big questions is that I've asked people, how do you go from being a little-known congressman to being president of the United States in just 9 years or so? And maybe, you know, today we might think Sarah Palin could go from being a former governor to president in 2 years. You know, that may be true. There's certainly a majority of people who would say that that's not possible. It's not going to happen. But for President Ford, especially in that day, that time, that era, to go from being an unknown to becoming president of the United States, and especially having not been elected,
right?
How could that happen? And just to tell your listening audience a bit more about my involvement with President Ford. It started when I was 17 and couldn't even vote. But in high school, I volunteered as a campaign assistant, a campaign aide, and I lived in what was then a very liberal Democratic county in Tennessee, in the South. Back in those days, you know, the South was not as red, and I think everyone now knows what red and blue means. But I volunteered to work for President Ford and still believe that politically President Ford was a good president and an honorable man. And sometimes an honorable person is forced into a position where they're given two choices, neither of which may be honorable. But that was my first connection to President Ford. Just a few years later, I became a Lyndon Baines Johnson scholar, moved to Washington, D.C. Your introduction did an incredible job of introducing me, and I thank you for that. And then much time passes until 2004. I'm a bookseller, a little bookseller, but had taken advantage of the advent of the internet, mm-hmm. selling autographed books. And I had the idea one day, along with my nephew and friends, how come I'm buying autographed books? Why don't we publish our own? And if so, who would be the person we would want to autograph these leather-bound books, the ones that you've seen with the gold edges made of leather, the beautiful heirloom books? And we made a list, and on that list, Buzz Aldrin was the first guy that we were able to make contact with. And then 2 days later, we hadn't thought of, what about the U.S. presidents? President Ford came to our mind. We overnighted a letter, and it took exactly 2 days to hear back from his office, and we got a yes. I mean, it happened that quickly that President Ford said he loves the idea of doing this book, and we had originally proposed it as a book about the JFK assassination.
And he signed it back in 2004, right?
He signed the contract with my company, and he autographed 3,000 copies of this book that he ended up loving so much that part of our deal was that he got 100 copies to give away. And we know he gave a copy to Vice President Cheney at the time because a lady from his office called to get the value, which was required by law to announce it to on the paperwork. But he ran out of his 100 copies, and a lady from his office called and wanted to know if the president could have more. And we said, sure.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, well, and recently people have actually come forward, if you can believe this, and they've said, how do we know President Ford actually said these things in that book? Well, he was alive for 4 years after, plus he was giving away, you know, copies as gifts. How could he, you know, he wrote it, but then someone questioned whether he wrote it. And that's what happens, George. First, people begin to question. They plant the seeds of doubt. Then they make fun of you. And I think we're getting close to a Gandhi quote here. They ignore you, they make fun of you, and then you win. I hope.
You hope.
I hope.
Now, when Ford was part of the Warren Commission, do you think he felt that they were doing a thorough job? Or do you think he knew all this?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No one on the commission thought they were doing a thorough job. They weren't even interviewing witnesses. Now, they went through painstaking efforts to interview hundreds of people, but they didn't interview key people. I mean, you know that.
Some of whom were dying off, right? Or being
exactly. They did an incredible job of doing what I believe their primary purpose was, and that was to keep us out of World War III.
Explain.
Well, I think most other presidential historians now agree that the Warren Commission was not put in place to conduct a thorough investigation, nor was that the primary intent nor desire of President Lyndon Baines Johnson. It was to make sure that there was not a war with Russia, because if there was a war with Russia, it was going to be a nuclear war, although Russia does touch Alaska and Sarah Palin can see it from her house comes to mind. I would say that in the 60s, the war would not have been land to land. It would have been intercontinental missile to intercontinental missile over Cuba. So the point is that Lee Harvey Oswald had made every attempt to go to Cuba prior to the assassination, but we know now that he was working for the CIA. Now, that's not been accepted by the officials because the officials haven't let us have access, but we know for a fact that Lee Harvey Oswald had torn up his passport, had moved to Russia, lived there for years, and then came back to the United States fairly unheralded, which is unheard of. So we, the government, we, the American government, were afraid that the death of President Kennedy by this so-called lone gunman who had lived in Russia might cause a war between Russia if it was believed that he was acting as a result as a Russian agent. So even those people who I believe were in charge of or who had given the wink to assassinate President Kennedy, they didn't want World War III. That would not help them make money. They want, that was their biggest fear. So they immediately distributed pre-prepared flyers, television, commercials, almost like there was an entire PR campaign pre-planned that was so sophisticated. And this part, I believe the movie JFK got it right on the head. They pre-prepared a PR campaign that made sure that no one for an instant believed it was Cuba or Russia.
Do you think Oswald acted alone?
Absolutely not.
No.
No. I do believe that he worked in the book depository. No one questions that. Mm-hmm. I do believe that he may have even delivered the gun that day. But even if he did, which I doubt, by the way, because I cannot fathom anyone being so stupid.
So you don't even think he was a shooter?
Absolutely not. I mean, could you, even today, much less in 1963, to buy a long gun, a rifle, you don't have to order one and put your name on it. You can go to any gun show. You can go to any gun shop and buy a long gun, not a pistol, but a rifle, without having proper ID and without even having to have your name on record. Now, why would he not just have that, but also have the postal authorities involved because he ordered it through the mail? How stupid could you be? And he wasn't stupid.
No, he wasn't stupid at all.
No.
You're trying to get some CIA files released. Are you running up against a roadblock, Tim?
A roadblock, to say the least. You know, and to put it better, George, I'm trying to get Congress to enforce its own law. If you now this now you and I haven't talked about this, but you tell me, and this is not public knowledge, but this is a fact. Congress passed unanimously that the CIA shall release the JFK files, and that was signed into law by President George Herbert Walker Bush.
Was there a date set on that? Let's come back and talk about that, Tim, when we come back. And we'll take more phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Tim, before we take some calls for you, tell us about the quest to get these CIA files.
My personal quest?
However you're trying to get them.
Well, you start with sending letters. That's what I did a year and a half ago. But what I'd like to give credit to a little-known reporter who's been suing in court, spending his own bucks, the CIA, to have this law enforced, because it's on the books. And I don't know of any other example where Congress and the president have passed and signed into law and then have our own government refuse to go along, to adhere to that law. That's the quest that I'm on, is asking that the government simply enforce its own law.
Who's the reporter who's trying to get all this?
Dale Myers. He's been spending his own bucks for 9 years now. He's in federal court in Michigan, and the CIA has tried to get the court to throw out the case, and the court has refused, but he's never got beyond Michigan.
What do you think those files would tell us, Tim?
He's specifically suing for the Johannes files. Are you familiar with that?
No. Tell us about that.
The Johannes files, it's this one man, and the question is, did he or did he not work for the CIA? And this is how it ties into Watergate, which ties into Nixon's comment on the secret tapes, which is my newest published book, by the way. Are you familiar with where Nixon says to Haldeman, we don't want to get into the whole JFK thing?
Right. It'll open up a can of worms, basically.
That's what he's referring to, Johannes. And Johannes was working for the CIA, and he's actually photographed only twice that we know of, one of which was on his retirement. And he was the guy who was in charge of the assassination. That's what I believe, and that's what this reporter believes. And the files that he's trying to get released under the Freedom of Information Act simply asks, did this person work for the government or not? He's going that route, so there could not be the response of national security.
What an amazing story.
Yeah, and if you haven't read it, I'm not sure what your people have gotten to you, but I was able to get one of my people, when she was here in the campaign, I got Hillary Clinton to say on tape, if she was elected, she would release the files. And especially if you don't know it, Bill Clinton appointed a committee to follow up on the law that George Herbert Walker Bush signed into law. And his committee reported back, Mr. President, nothing new. And then when Clinton was gone, the CIA said, nah, we didn't show you the real files.
Stonewalling all the way.
Not just stonewalling, lying. And this whole thing this past summer, does the CIA laugh? I mean, I was sitting here every day saying, what? Of course they lie. I mean, I can't believe the reporters didn't know that.
Yeah.
And the speaker would get in trouble for saying they lied? I don't understand.
Let's go to our Skype line. Keith is with us in Crofton, Maryland. He's been on hold for a while. Go ahead, Keith.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I was a guest on your show way back about the curve on Mars. And,
yeah,
you asked
sure thing.
A question. Yeah, and you said you asked me if I was an agent or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hesitated. Well, my mother actually worked for Central Intelligence. She was a secretary there. And she taught me this trick. I was a young kid. She's driving. We're sitting on the side of the road. I'm in the passenger seat. She said, move with me so people on the side of the car can't see what I'm doing in the middle of the car. And as she's in her purse and she moves to the front of the car, I lean forward. As she moves to the back, I sit up. And I'm leaning forward, sitting up. I felt like a fool. I thought I'd never ever see anything like that until I saw the Saputo film. If you watch the driver and the passenger, they're doing that exact same trick. The passenger is blocking the view of the people on his side of the car from seeing what the driver is doing in the center of the car. The driver and the passenger, after the first two shots ring out, turn around and look back. They turn back around. The passenger leans forward. He then moves in complete unison with the driver.
And the driver passenger turns. Was Connolly, right?
No. I'm talking about the other the other Secret Service agent.
Oh, that's right. There were two up in the front, and then Connolly was behind them, and then the president.
Right.
Okay, that's right.
The driver turns over his right shoulder. The passenger sits up. It looks like a shiny reflection off the top of his head is coming up. But he turns. There's actually a gun in the driver's hand, but he can't get the shot off because Connolly is between him and Kennedy. He turns back around. The passenger leans forward again. The driver turns back around. At this point, Connolly is starting to lay down on his right's lap. The driver turns back around. As soon as the shiny object, it looks like a reflection off the top of the passenger's head, comes up, Kennedy goes back down and around. If the shot was made from the driver, then the hole in the back of Kennedy's head that all the doctors drew just behind his ear would have been an exit wound. And that would have been the shot wound in the top of his head. It came out there. Now, if both of these Secret Service agents testified that they never turned around, the Zapruder film totally shows that they perjured themselves. Why did they lie? That's enough to open this case back up again, because for some reason, they had reasons to lie.
Well, clearly you're right, too, Keith. They did turn around. I mean, I saw that. And, of course, you know, the late Bill Cooper, his theory was that the driver fired the fatal shots. Now, Tim, have you ever heard that? Have you seen any of that?
I have heard that theory. For sure, the Secret Service men did turn around.
They did turn, absolutely.
But the bigger point is the case isn't closed. I mean, the commission delivered its report, but the case isn't closed. The key is to get the files opened and thereby adhering to law. Congress and the president passed a law. Congress passed, the president signed it, and the CIA now has spent millions, tens of millions of our taxpayer dollars. You know, taxes right now are a big issue. Maybe they always are. But if you don't know it, your tax dollars right now are being spent by the CIA saying we will not do what Congress has passed a law to say. Who's running this government?
Dwight Eisenhower, when he was leaving office, warned of the industrial military complex.
Yep.
Do you believe that JFK got caught up in the middle of all that?
No doubt. We would have been out of Vietnam. LBJ would not have been on the ticket with Kennedy.
The Federal Reserve would have been changed and altered.
Well, now that's the email I got tonight about the red dollars.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think there was a combination of everyone who wanted him out.
And everyone did. And when I say everyone, obviously I'm exaggerating, but everyone of power, J. Edgar Hoover at that time, if you had to pick one person who may have had more ability to get things done than the president, it was J. Edgar Hoover. And I would argue that J. Edgar Hoover had more ability to get things done than the president. And guess what President Ford's first bill introduced to Congress was when he was elected congressman? The answer? To give J. Edgar Hoover a raise.
Interesting.
And before he was even a congressman, J. Edgar Hoover went to Grand Rapids and campaigned for Gerald Ford to be elected. A sitting FBI director
goes to
Grand Rapids and campaigns for a not even an elected official yet.
That is strange. That is. Would Kennedy, depends on who would have run against him, I guess, would he have won re-election? I mean, was he that popular amongst the American voters?
The key is the Electoral College. He would have certainly carried the big states. And at that time, even if LBJ had not been on the ticket, he would have carried Texas. Because, now remember, until the 1970s, there was no such thing as a Republican Party in Texas. There were two factions of the Democrat Party, the conservatives and the liberals. But whomever the nominee was, Texas would have gone for the Democratic nominee, and no one would have challenged JFK in the Democratic primary. So he would have certainly carried the Electoral College. We know that's. I know of no one of any credibility who would question that at all.
All right. Next up, we go to Randy in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Go ahead, Randy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Thanks real quick. I'm going to make this real quick. First, I just want to thank Sam. He was World War II bomber pilot with the Jolly Rogers who we lost last week. Thank you, Sam. Second, Kennedy, I do believe, was assassinated because he repealed the gold, or actually he brought the gold standard back into play. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was is that, you know, we went back from paper money to the gold standard. And then as soon as he was assassinated, when LBJ got on Air Force One, that was one of the first acts that he repealed, reversing that decision that Kennedy made. And third, and I'll take the comment off the air, but third and finally, I do not think that we will see another election. I think this is it. This is when the ball gets dropped, the final play, the One World Order, the Bilderbergs, the whole nine yards. This is it. And it all started way back when. So I'd like to know what you think about the, what,
all right.
You know.
We will see. As far as the election, yes, I think there'll be another election, and there'll be another one after that, and another one after that, because they want that illusion that we are voting for the presidency. Tim?
Well, the other level is, what power does the presidency have anyway? If the president, like Bill Clinton, and I was unclear, George, don't know if we were on air when you and I were talking about the Bill Clinton committee or not. Was that on air?
Yeah.
If a president can appoint a committee with the authority of the president, goes to the CIA offices with the authority of the president, and under the instructions, show us everything you have on the JFK assassination, only to find out when Bill Clinton wasn't president that the CIA snookered them and didn't show them. What power does the president have? Go back in time, George Herbert Walker Bush signed into law. When it was the last time the American people really rose up to any degree saying it's time to let us know what really happened, which is when the JFK, the movie, was such a big thing, that's when Congress passed unanimously saying the CIA must release the files. George Herbert Walker Bush signed it into law. And ever since then, now, 17 years, I'm not going to do the math, but for that many years, the CIA has said, Mr. President, whoever it was, we're going to lie to you, we're going to deceive you, we're going to do everything we can, but we're not going to release the files. Who's running the government? The presidency is almost like a PR guy. That's what it appears like to me. He's the guy in charge of press relations, just like the guy who's now turning against the insurance industry, telling us for the first time, absolutely, your health insurance company is lying to you. It's not real. If everyone were to have medical bills, the health insurance industry would go bankrupt tomorrow. Just like every large corporation has a PR guy, I see our president as being the PR guy. Now, who's he working for? That's the big question.
Well, you know, Alex Jones says that he's merely the puppet for the puppet masters.
There you go.
Gets elected. Let's go to Robin in Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Robin.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Okay.
And your guest, I guess you kind of answered my question. You know, I think President Kennedy was taken out because he would have got everybody together, the Vietnam War. You know how they had all the people were against it and people were for it, and, you know, divide people and you can conquer. is what you can do. Divide the people.
Got that right on. That's right.
And, you know, they talk about the bully that breaks the windows in the neighborhood. Well, in the United States, it's not the bullies in other countries. It's very close to home. And I'll let you know
that.
Absolutely. Tim, tell me a little bit more about the, you know, this incredible volume of the Warren Commission. So basically you think it was a document put together by the committee to kind of temper the tension between Russia, the Soviet Union at the time, and us, and probably so many other factions there. They just didn't want the truth out, did they?
That's the bottom line, but keep in mind, we didn't have to wait for the findings of the Warren Commission for that goal to be achieved. We couldn't wait. We, meaning those people who were in charge of the shooting, it was out as soon as Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested. I mean, it was spontaneous that Russia didn't do it. Now, then there came the connection between Lee Harvey Oswald handing out flyers related to Cuba. So then that had to be put to rest. All that happened real fast. The Warren Commission didn't do that. The Warren Commission produced 26 volumes of books, 26 hardcover edition set, basically transcriptions of people that they did interview, and we also know now containing false information, including the point of the bullet entry or exit, depending upon whom you want to believe. But the commission itself took a year to have its findings announced to the public. So by that time, there was no threat of a war with Russia. The focus was on Vietnam, and a company called Brown and Root, which is now serving the meals to our American servicemen, because the other company got kicked out because they were stealing money from the American government, and everyone knows the name of that company. The real strange thing is they're the same corporate entity. They're the same people who own the two.
It never stops, does it, Tim?
It really doesn't, because when you get up to the level of being a corporation, the size of, you know, $100 billion, the national debt now is $10 trillion. If you were to take away just the money that has been wasted on the two wars, and I'm not going to include Afghanistan.
Oh, it would be, Tim, it would be absolutely unbelievable. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM.